You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Greetings, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica radio stations all across the United States, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television by Free Speech TV Network, on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide. Greetings. In Ohio, John Kasich says, yeah, we got some flattened towns. We got a lot of dead people, but, gee, it's got nothing to do with global warming, and we don't want any federal money, Mr. Obama. You can just hang on to it. Heaven forbid we put people to work cleaning up. We put people to work taking care of things. That might make the economy better, and it might actually make President Obama look good. That's not going to happen. Mitt Romney's trying to buy his way into the political campaign. Super Tuesday is coming up tomorrow, and the super PACs have spent about $10 million so far on Super Tuesday, $5 million of that from Romney. A little more than that, actually. He accounts for more than half of all the spending. One guy. Over the weekend, he got endorsed by Eric Cantor, Tom Coburn, and John Ashcroft. People can see which way the wind is blowing, and they're jumping. They're to mangle metaphors. They're jumping on the ship or whatever. You know, they want to say, "Yeah, I'm here. I was there with you early on. So if you win, you know, I'll take a cabinet position." But the "if you win" part, Mitt Romney has the highest negative ratings of any Republican nominee for president since Bob Dole did in 1996. President Obama spoke to AIPAC over the weekend. And I thought one of the more interesting, of course, he said, you know, we're with Israel. He emphasized over and over and over again how supportive of Israel his administration has been, by way of basically blowing back on these right-wingers who go on TV constantly and radio constantly, and the first words out of their mouth is Obama hates Israel. But I thought this was really interesting. Clip 17 here, Jacob. When I took office 4 years ago, things were in tatters. This is basically President Obama talking about George Bush's policy with regard to Iran and Israel, and more importantly, what the consequence of George W. Bush invading Iraq. Keep in mind, the first large office building, the first big building to open in Iraq when Iraq was kind of open for business about 2 years ago, was the Bank of Iran. Here's what President Obama had to say at AIPAC on Saturday.
When I took office, the efforts to apply pressure on Iran were in tatters. Iran had gone from zero centrifuges spinning to thousands without facing broad pushback from the world. In the region, Iran was ascendant, increasingly popular and extending its reach. In other words, the Iranian leadership was united and on the move, and the international community was divided about how to go forward. And so from my very first months in office, we put forward a very clear choice to the Iranian regime, a path that would allow them to rejoin the community of nations if they meet their international obligations, or a path that leads to an escalating series of consequences if they don't.
There you go. And George Bush left me a mess. It was Iraq that historically had been the regional barrier to Iran, shall we say. But we'll see how this plays out. But, of course, the big story, I guess, of the week of the weekend is Limbaugh. And here's the thing. It's not really Limbaugh. It's right-wing misogyny. Misogyny is a $25 word that means hatred of women, more or less. And this is on display in extraordinary fashion and has been for years and years in the Republican Party, on the right wing. We've got to dig out the clips, Jacob, here during the show of some of the more outrageous things that Limbaugh has said in the past, you know, his conservative truth number, whatever it is that. But we'll get to that. But this is his most recent comments. Clip number one. Now, even before we play clip number one, let me give you a little setup here. This is actually the testimony of Sandra Fluck before Congress. Now, she was not allowed to testify by Daryl Issa, because Daryl Issa wanted nothing but men on the panel to talk about women's contraception or religion. Take your choice. Either one, women don't know anything about it. So what she said was, without insurance coverage, contraception can cost a woman over $3,000 during law school. For a lot of students like me are on public interest scholarships, that's practically an entire summer salary. 40% of female students at Georgetown Law report struggling financially as a result of this policy. One told us of how embarrassed and powerless she felt when she was standing at the pharmacy counter learning for the first time that contraception wasn't covered and had to walk away because she couldn't afford it. Women like her have no choice but to go without contraception. Just last week, a married female student told me she had stopped using contraception because she couldn't afford it any longer. Women employed in low-wage jobs without contraception coverage face the same choice. So this is a more universal statement, and she's not talking about herself. She said one student told us she knew birth control wasn't covered, and so she assumed, this is Sandra Fluck's testimony, and she assumed that's how Georgetown's insurance handled all of women's sexual health care. So when she was raped, she didn't go to the doctor even to be examined or tested for sexually transmitted diseases because she thought the insurance wasn't going to cover something like that, something that was related to a woman's reproductive health. As one student put it, this policy communicates to female students that our school doesn't understand our needs. She went on to say these denials of contraceptive coverage impact real people. In the worst cases, women who need this medication for other medical reasons suffer dire consequences. So here's Limbaugh's initial comments, clip number one.
The college co-ed Susan Fluke, who goes before a congressional committee and essentially says that she must be paid to have sex. What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? Makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. She's having so much sex she can't afford the contraception. She wants you and me and the taxpayers to pay her to have sex. What does that make us? We're the pimps.
Yes, so much sex. Now, clip number six. This was Liz, one of the anchors on Fox News with Brett Baer. Limbaugh is basically saying the more sex you have, the more contraception you need. Here was a little bit of pushback on Fox so-called news.
Okay. First of all, I just have to say, obviously, Rush Limbaugh does not understand how birth control works because of these comments that, you know, she wanted more birth control somehow. Anyway, putting
that
aside.
She had testified that she was paying $3,000 over 3 years for contraception.
Yes, but he kept saying in his comments today that, you know, she wanted to have more sex or she needed more birth control pills, and that's not how it works.
So back to clip number two here, Jacob. This is Rush Limbaugh again.
She's saying that they are struggling financially. That's $1,000 a year. I'm not making any of it up. Her sex life is active. She's having sex so frequently that she can't afford all the birth control pills that she needs. That's what she's saying.
Yeah, there you go. And there's been a lot of pushback against this. Here's clip number eight. This is Peggy Noonan on George Will's This Week program.
What Rush Limbaugh said was crude, rude, even piggish. It was just unacceptable. He ought to be called on it.
On the other hand, Bill O'Reilly, do we have time for this clip, clip number 10, Jacob? 25 seconds? No, we don't. Okay, we've got to hit the break here. I'll play this when we come back. And this is really remarkable. You know, well, I'll leave my rant for after the break. What we're seeing, and now Rush Limbaugh is backing off. He's saying, oh, I apologize. I got to read you his non-apology apology. It's a nonsense non-apology apology. And he's losing advertisers. So who's the prostitute now?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who's doing something because he's worried about the money? Seems to me like it's Limbaugh.
Yeah! I've done some pretty stupid things, but hey!
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Now, this is not the first time that Rush Limbaugh has gone off like this. And I have a theory about why he's not getting away with it now and he has in the past, which I want to share with you in just a moment. But first, here's a clip from Rush Limbaugh from, you know, many years ago. This 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. Fire it off, Jacob. Oh, it's going to take just a second to drag it down.
I have long told you, Undeniable Truth of Life number 24, written back in 1987, feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society. And even to this day, people poo-poo this and say it's insensitive. How could you possibly say something like that? Well, because I mean it, because I believe there's something to it.
So this is from 1987 to today. And then, you know, clip number three, Jacob. This is Limbaugh last Friday.
Politically, what this really means is that abortion doesn't carry the weight politically that it used to. And this whole contraception thing is a replacement plank for what's failing on the abortion side.
Now, this is Limbaugh trying to say, oh, well, what we're really talking about here is abortion. No, don't think so. Don't think so. And here's my take on what's going on here. The Republican Party and right-wingers in general, from the 1870s till today, their core policy has been purely economic. It has been the policy of the 1%. In fact, arguably, it has not even been the policy of the 1%. It's been the policy of the 1/10th or 1/100th of 1%. That's been the Republican Party. The party of the barons, the bankers, and the barristers. I mean, the party of the power, the rich and powerful. But they needed allies to be able to win elections. And so they've reached out over the years to religious people. They've reached out over the years to homophobes. They've reached out over the years to racists. Nixon's famous Southern strategy. H.W. Bush's Willie Horton ads. They've reached out over the years to people who are frightened of crime. Willie Horton ad again, and then, you know, the whole death penalty thing. They've reached out over the years to people who are afraid of communism, you know, Joe McCarthy and whatnot. I mean, it's just any kind of fear that they can tap into, they've tapped into, to divert people's attention from the fact that they're all about robbing blind the middle class and making the rich richer. And this goes in cycles. Sometimes they come right out and they say, you know, we're all about making the rich richer, the Republican Party here. Reagan did that. Hey, trickle-down economics. If the rich get a lot richer, it's going to trickle down to you guys in the middle class. I mean, he came right out and said it. Jimmy Carter had walked to his inaugural ball. He, you know, it was kind of a dressed-down occasion. Ronald Reagan, everybody comes in limousines. Everybody's wearing, you know, $3,000 suits and gowns and far more. He turned the White House into a Hollywood gala. And greed is good. That was the mantra of the 1980s. Of the Reagan era. So here's my hypothesis. If you look at the history of the face, the public face of a right-wing machine whose real concern is economic, right? I mean, the reason why the Koch brothers fund ALEC, the American Legislative Council, is to, number one, make sure Republicans are in power. Number two, give them the power to pass legislation that makes things more profitable for plutocrats and billionaires. Oh, no more death tax. Right. That affects 0.3% of Americans. No more regulations. What, that really, you know, helps out people who do refineries and run paper mills and things like that, like the Koch brothers. Surprise. So totally economic agenda. But they couch all these things in other terms. So I see this as cycles of history. Right, you start with the election of Harding in 1921. He came right out and said it, just like Reagan did. Harding came right out. The platform that he ran on in the election of 1920 was more business in government, less government in business. which is the, you know, was the 1920s equivalent of, you know, smaller government. Less regulation. That was how they said it back then. Okay, so Harding came into power in 1921 and dropped the top income tax rate from 73% down to 25%, and boom, set off a wild bubble, a speculative bubble, which always happens when you suddenly hand, you know, gobs of money to very, very wealthy people. Some of them are good stewards of their money. Some of them go nuts, like in the stock market, which led to the great crash of 1929. And then the Republicans had to kind of go into hiding and say, okay, we'll support the New Deal. I mean, there were some who were still fighting the good fight, but by and large, you ended up with the moderate Republicans through the 30s. And then the 40s came, and the moderate Republicans, you know, they weren't getting anywhere. And so the radical Republicans took over in 46. They took control of the House. They held it for 2 years, past Taft-Hartley. Let's, you know, kick a hole in the side of labor. And when Harry Truman proposed national health care for everybody, they wouldn't even let it come up for a vote. They were so right-wing. Everybody was so horrified by the Congress of 46, of 47, 48. It was elected in 46. That in 48, they put Democrats back in control of Congress, and it stayed that way for over 40 years. So then the Republicans went back to being moderates. This was the Eisenhower election. Then they went to being crazy conservatives. That was the Goldwater years. And they said what they were actually thinking. And then they figured out that doesn't work, so Nixon went back to being a moderate. And then Reagan comes out as a crazy conservative. And frankly, I think now is the time for the moderates, but nobody sent the memo to Rush.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And this is why I think, you know, Romney is getting some traction. He's ultimately going to position himself as a moderate. And as I said, nobody sent the memo to Rush.
They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Rush Limbaugh being a misogynist. Ron Paul came out and spoke out about this. Actually, what Ron Paul spoke about was Rush Limbaugh's non-apology. Here's Limbaugh's apology. This was published over the weekend. He said, I did not mean a personal attack on Ms. Fluke. It's pronounced like book. Fluke. Okay. Yeah, I think it is absolutely absurd that during these very serious political times, we're discussing personal sexual recreational activities before members of Congress. Actually, she wasn't. She was talking about medical issues. Anyhow, he says, I personally do not agree that American citizens should pay for these social activities. What happened to personal accountability and responsibility? I think we're talking about medications here that 14% of American women actually need to take for medical reasons. In any case, he said, where do we draw the line? If this is accepted as the norm, what will follow? Will we be debating if taxpayers should pay for new sneakers for all students who are interested in running to keep fit? Actually, he says that are interested. You use who when you're talking about people, Rush. Anyhow, in my monologue, I posited that it is not our business whatsoever to know what is going on in anyone's bedroom, nor do I think it is a topic that should reach a presidential level. Oh, really? He said, my choice of words was not the best, and in the attempt to be humorous, I created a national stir. I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluke for the insulting word choices. Right. I don't consider this an apology. I consider this a justification and a few words thrown into it that will hopefully get him his advertisers back. David Friend, the CEO of Carbonite, and disclosure, Carbonite is one of the sponsors of this program, and I've met David Friend. Louise and I had lunch with him in Portland a couple of years ago. Very nice guy. And he told us the story of how he started Carbonite because one of his daughters was going off to college and her computer had crashed, or she was worried about her computer crashing. It's been about 2 years since we had lunch with him. I don't remember the exact details, but it was a story about one of his daughters. And I hope it's okay that I'm telling this on the air. I'm assuming it is because he references it. So he's an engineer, and so he invented this over the web automatic in the background backup system for her computer so that she'd never have to worry about having another hard drive crash. that if it ever crashed, her files would be available. That's what Carbonite does. And so anyhow, he writes, I mean, there's been a bunch of advertisers who've dropped Limbaugh, but this one is exceptional. David Friend, the CEO of Carbonite, writes, "No one with daughters the age of Sandra Fluck, and I have two, could possibly abide the insult and abuse heaped upon this courageous and well-intentioned young lady. Mr. Limbaugh, with his highly personal attacks on Ms. Fluck, overstepped any reasonable bounds of decency. Even though Mr. Limbaugh has now issued an apology, we have nonetheless decided to withdraw our advertising from his show. We hope that our action, along with the other advertisers who have already withdrawn their ads, will ultimately contribute to a more civilized public discourse." David Friend, I applaud you. That is that takes courage, frankly. That takes courage for somebody who's in the business realm, I mean, who's not political, who's advertising on my show and on Limbaugh's show, to say, you know, he's got a great product. He's trying to get it out there. He's trying to make money. I mean, that's what American business people do. And God bless him. To stand up and say, you know, there's some things that are more important than making money. Because I guarantee you, Limbaugh's got a lot of listeners. I agree with Jen Kuger. I don't think it's close to the numbers that he's quoting, but he's got a lot of listeners. And for an advertiser to pull their ads, that means that they're going to lose some business. And to publicly pull their ads, it means that they're going to upset some of Limbaugh's ditto heads, and they're going to not just lose the business that they would have gotten from the advertiser, but they're probably, some people are going to say, okay, that's it. You're not with Limbaugh, I'm not with you. So this is a big step. This is a big deal. And as I've said before, I'm not a big fan of boycotts in general, but this is remarkable what's going on here. Here's Rush Limbaugh. Here's another oldie but goldie. Here you go.
You know what sexual harassment is? You know what it really is? It's a political tool. It is a political tool invented by the left. And for the express, just like political correctness is a political tool of the left to shut people down, sexual harassment is a political tool of the left to get rid of people or to score money gains, whatever is most desired.
Now, see, back a couple of years ago, back 4, 5, 6 years ago, when Limbaugh said that, I believe that we were in the ascendancy of the right-wing cycle where the mask was taken off. Or maybe you could argue that that's when the mask is most on, because he wasn't talking so much about economic issues as he was going after women. Well, now, in any case, now the Republicans and the right-wingers are into the Eisenhower-Nixon cycle here. I believe the Romney cycle, the moderate cycle, and they have no use for this. And there's a long list of Republicans who have come out and said, no, you know, we're not going to go along with this. And oddly, Bill O'Reilly doesn't get this. Bill O'Reilly, this is clip 10, Jacob. Bill O'Reilly, you know, another old white guy that's totally out of touch with what's going on in American society and the political changes, frankly, that are going on. Here's what Bill O'Reilly had to say.
I don't understand the sense of entitlement. Like, okay, I have a social life, people. I have a social life, people. And I want you to pay for it, okay? I'm going, what? Well, I went to college. I didn't have any money, Sandra. I didn't have any money, okay? Somehow, I got by. Somehow, I painted houses so I could buy whatever I had to buy. But not for Sandra. No. She wants it covered by the government. And this is driving me crazy.
Yeah. So, there you go. Somebody needs to tell Limbaugh and O'Reilly that while as I said in my whole setup to this whole cycle thing, the Republican Party's agenda never changes. It's all about the Republican billionaires, the right-wing billionaires. It's all about the wealth and power, basically, whether it's by means of war. You keep in mind, you know, George W. Bush made war and made, you know, Eric Prince and Halliburton, and he made a whole bunch of millionaires with that war. When FDR made war, I don't know if you can easily find that clip, Jacob, but FDR said, we will not have any war millionaires from World War II. there's a significant difference between the way that Democrats conduct wars and Republicans. Republicans conduct wars as a business opportunity. Democrats conduct wars, well, with the possible exception of LBJ, because there's really no choice, and it's not here to make a profit. Here we go. This is Franklin Roosevelt.
Our present emergency and a common sense of decency make it imperative that no new group of war millionaires shall come into being in this nation as a result of the struggles abroad.
So you're not going to hear that from George W. Bush. You're not going to hear that from Ronald Reagan. And, you know, frankly, Mitt Romney might say something like that, but his policies aren't going to reflect that because he's as radical as the rest of them when it comes to money. He will pretend to be a social moderate, a Massachusetts liberal even, but when it comes to money, I mean, he's already laid it out. He's got a new tax plan. It's going to raise taxes on people making under $15,000 a year. Raise taxes on people making under $15,000 a year. Lower taxes the most on people like him who make over $10 million a year. Cut taxes for the rich, raise taxes for the working poor. That's Mitt, and he's right out there. I mean, you can see it. It's on his website. He's proud of it. Len, in New York City. Hey, Len, what's up?
Hi. You know, there's so much to say about this. You know, my problem with the Limbaugh thing is that he's not off the air already. Hopefully, you know, he will go the direction of Glenn Beck because of this, because it really is the over-the-top moment.
You know, I think it's entirely possible. My friend and colleague Ed Schultz made an importune statement. He wasn't going off on an anti-woman tirade. He was upset with Laura Ingraham for something that she had said that had to do with politics, and he referred to her as a talk slut. But he wasn't going off on this whole anti-woman, she wants to have sex, pound it, pound it, pound it. He just, in passing, on his radio show and on his TV show, he issued an apology. I thought he was going to cry on the air. And he took him, and he was off the air for a week. That's my point. I mean, that's, you know, when a liberal even dances, it wasn't even close to what Limbaugh does. Just, you know, and I think quite frankly, accidentally used that word. Boom! You know, the sky falls. Well, Limbaugh does 3 days in a row, pounds on it.
I really have to make a couple of points. Number one, Randy Rhodes pointed out, like you said, like they're all the same advertisers. So you have to call up the advertisers directly, you know, so which means you actually have to listen to the show to find out who's still advertising and call them up directly.
Okay, Len, thanks a lot for the call. Actually, you can typically check their websites. 45 minutes past the hour, and as I said, well, I'll leave it there. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with more of your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Meanwhile, I don't want this to get lost in the Sturm und Drang. I've mentioned it at some length, but John Kasich said, no, we don't want money from the federal government to help the tornado victims. Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving. Starting next week, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time.
Freedom is
a lot going on in New York, by the way, this week. And first of all, Heist, the movie, is playing through Thursday of this week, through March 8th. And it's only at New York City's Quad Cinema. That's down in the Village, 34 West 13th Street. Bernie Sanders, Robert Kuttner, David K. Johnston, Naomi Prinz, Van Jones. Narrated, according to the New York Times, narrated by a very chipper narrator. That would be me. So that's going on. And also, Here is going on. And Kristen Martin, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, you are. You got it.
Great. Kristen Martin is with us. She is the artistic director for Here and the media liaison for tomorrow's action, Pink Slips lining Broadway tomorrow. Tell us about what this is, Kristen.
Well, we're going to have 5,000 concerned citizens forming a three-mile line starting at the Bull at Bowling Green and stretching all the way up to Union Square. And this protest is to represent the 14 million currently unemployed Americans and to try to demand action from Congress and corporations to help alleviate the problems that are happening.
That is fabulous. And so you've got this is tomorrow at what time again?
It is tomorrow, which is Super Tuesday, March 6th, mm-hmm. from 8:14 to 8:28 a.m.
8:14 to 8:28. Why those
yes.
times?
14 minutes for the 14 million unemployed.
Ah, okay. Makes perfect sense. And how did who brought this? By the way, the website is theline2012.wordpress.com, and we'll have a link to that at tomhartman.com if you didn't catch that. Kristen, how did this come about?
Well, back in 2004, we did a similar action to this during the 2004 Republican convention in New York. It was also focused on unemployment. And it felt for me with this election year and the issues that are being talked about and not being talked about that it was an important time to bring this back. So we've been working together, a group of artists and activists and labor movement people. Our core organizers are myself, Mark Pleasant from the Working Theater, Mahayana Landown, who's an artist activist, and Tal Yarden, who's another artist activist. So the four of us just started really talking about this, and we've got over, at this point, almost 40 organizations collaborating with us to make this happen.
That is spectacular. And once again, the website, theline2012.wordpress.com. And Kristen, I wish you the very best.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you calling us to people's attention. And if people want to come join us, please go to our website and you can sign up. And we'd love to have you. We still need more people to show up.
Great. So tomorrow morning, 8:14 to 8:28.
That's right.
Okay, in Manhattan. Kristen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Doug, listening to us on K-Talk in Santa Barbara. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. The one thing I want to bring up that nobody seems to be talking about is not just the insults that Rush Limbaugh was brought against Sandra Fluck. It was the lies, two lies actually, that they were predicated on. Number one is that she wanted her birth control pills paid or free, and the other one was taxpayers paying for it. We're talking about private insurance companies.
Right.
And, you know, that's not paid for by taxpayers, and she actually does have to pay for them through her insurance premiums.
Right, and there's a copay, typically.
Exactly.
So,
but, you know, and then Bill O'Reilly last night repeating the same lie over again.
Yeah, this is the thing. This started with one of the right-wing websites. I think it was CNS News, might have been WorldNet Daily, whatever, that this was the story. I think that's where Limbaugh got it. And I think rather than reading her testimony, he just you know read that article and said, oh, this is what it is, and then the article is, in my opinion, defamatory, and then he went off on it, and then O'Reilly said, oh, well, if Limbaugh says it, and this is how the right wing echo machine has historically worked in America, is they take, you know, a lie starts out someplace, it gets amplified, whether it's, you know, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, or whether it's, you know, Vince Foster was killed by Hillary Clinton, or, I mean, you know, fill in the blanks, right? Some, you know, Barack Obama isn't a citizen. It gets started someplace. It gets amplified by the right-wing echo chamber. It makes its way into right-wing talk radio. Right-wing talk radio pounds it to the point where it jumps over to Fox Television. Once it's on Fox Television, it's considered television, and all the other networks figure that they've got to cover it. And then when they cover it, they don't go back and point out the lie, which is what happened over the weekend. We saw a whole bunch of, you know, Sunday shows talking about Rush Limbaugh, and none of them were talking about, as you correctly point out, Doug, the underlying lie underneath this whole thing. Thanks a lot for the call, and well said. Jamie in Deer Island, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Jamie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I agree 100% on your take on the non-apology apology, because if you listen to what Limbaugh said, he said, I apologize for the insulting comments I chose, so which that only tells me is that he chose the wrong insulting comments. He could have used others.
Yeah, he said, I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluck for the insulting word choices. So
yeah,
he should have chosen different insulting words.
Yeah, like poor tramp or something like that.
But yeah, I think
anyway,
I think that's his way of saying he should have said tramp instead of the S word. That's an interesting observation, and I think you're spot on with that. Thank you. Thank you for the call. Walter in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Walter, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to say I'm the bad boy here. I'm going to stand up for briefly for Limbaugh, not for this thing, but a long time ago, Limbaugh had a TV show, short period of time in the 90s.
Right.
And he did a show on a comedian who died that people had forgotten. Red Skelton. Nobody else in the entire world did a show on him, and Limbaugh did like a half hour on it.
Right.
And
Red Skelton was a good guy.
Yeah, he was. I don't think he ever said anything bad in his life, and yet Limbaugh did the show on him, and because of that, he lost his show. Wasn't much of a show.
I think he lost his show because nobody was watching it. Some people make the transition from radio to television really well. Other people don't. Walter, thanks for the call. My recollection, and I was around at the time, was that Michael Savage tried the same thing. He tried doing television too, and it just didn't get any traction. Glenn Beck, on the other hand, does really good television. It's just that he got over the top with all of his anti-Semitism and racism and weird conspiracy theories and everything else. And we'll see how it all works out. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, one of the people we haven't heard from. Oh, we've heard some from, but there's, frankly, everything's all about Limbaugh, right? Sandra Fluck had, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. I understand it's F-L-U-K-E, and it's pronounced like book, Fluck. Okay. Here's clip number 13, Jacob. Here's her initial response to this.
I guess my reaction is the reaction that a lot of women have when they've been called these names. Initially, you're stunned, but then very quickly you're outraged because this is historically the kind of language that is used to silence women, especially when women stand up and say that these are their reproductive health care needs and this is what they need.
Now, of course, she's reacting to Rush Limbaugh calling her words that typically are not said on the radio. In fact, typically are not said about women in polite company of any sort. And doubling down on it 2 days in a row. And this is the thing that I think is so important is that this is not new. And it's not just Limbaugh. This is, you know, across the right-wing spectrum. You're talking about patriarchy. You're talking about power here. Power of men over women. When Hillary Clinton had the audacity to run for president of the United States, a woman running for president of the United States, how dare she? You know, when Barack Obama ran, you know, a black man running for president, Limbaugh came up with the song Barack the Magic Negro. Remember that? But when Hillary Clinton ran, it was, guys, she wants to put your testicles in the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. Here it is.
Ladies, are you fed up with men calling the shots? Are you looking for a new weapon in the war of the sexes? Then you need the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. You can finally grab the power that's keeping Hillary Clinton safe from tough media questions. The Hillary Rodham Clinton testicle lockbox is easy to use and totally effective. Just snap it around the nether regions of the potential offender. And bingo, you're in control.
Hey, babe, give me the remote. The Giants are on.
But I want to watch Senator Clinton. She's speaking tonight.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm in charge.
In charge of this, Buster. What are you doing? Now sit there and shut up, and maybe you'll get your testicles back. Oh, man, how am I going to tell the guys at the plant about this?
If you order now, you can supersize your order in the Double Deluxe Testicle Lockbox, big enough for 8 boards and 8 moderators. This Christmas, give a gift to the woman who wants everything. Make it a Hillary Clinton Testicle Lockbox. Available everywhere. Power is crazy.
Yes, give her the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. Wasn't that funny? No, it wasn't. And this is the kind of stuff that passes as mainstream comedy. I mean, I could see this in a comedy club or something. But again, I mentioned what happened to Ed Schultz in the last segment. Randy Rhodes, when we both worked at Air America, in a comedy club at a completely separate venue, made a comment about Hillary Clinton, used an inappropriate word. But this was in a private comedy club where it's normal to use obscenity and it's normal to go over the top. And Air America basically used that as an excuse to can her. So is this going to be Russia's Waterloo? I don't know. I think, frankly, aside from his $400 million contract, I think he's got a lot more power than most people realize. I mean, there's a whole website about where Republicans can go to apologize to Rush. I think it's called I'msorryrush.com is my recollection. So, in fact, clip number 7, here's George Will commenting on this.
What it indicates is that the Republican leaders are afraid of Rush Limbaugh. Yes. They want to bomb Iran, yes. But they're afraid
That's
of Rush
reason.
Limbaugh.
Yes.
With good reason.
They are, Peggy.
Yes, they're all saying, yep, absolutely. And, Limbaugh's response to this, clip number 5, or clip number 4, first of all, clip number 4. This is his doubles down part 1. This is day 2 of Limbaugh's tirade against this young woman who's a law student.
Here I said, well, what would you call someone who wants us to pay for her to have sex? What would you call that woman? You'd call him a slut, a prostitute. I mean, it is... Look, at least I didn't call her a woman driver. And I'll tell you this, you people on the left, I'll happily buy her all the aspirin she wants.
Oh, at least he didn't call her a woman driver. Well, what did he say about Danica Patrick? Here, listen to this.
Danica Patrick said, I leave it up to the government to make good decisions for America. She was talking about Obama mandating that the Catholic Church provide contraception. What do you expect from a woman driver?
How dare a woman drive, professionally in NASCAR? We can't have that. So here, clip 5, Rush Limbaugh doubling down, part 2.
So I'm offering a compromise today. I will buy all of the women at Georgetown University as much aspirin to put between their knees as they want.
There you go. John in Santa Rosa, California. John, I think you might have just touched the... If the three words, the half a dozen words here I see on the screen are any indication, you might have touched the issue. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think one of the reasons a guy like Rush Limbaugh is able to get away with what he does is because he recognizes there are a number of Americans out there who are so blinded by their bigotry toward other Americans, they will go out and vote against their self-interest. I think it's just another part of the Southern strategy, which, by the way, is not confined to the South.
Yeah. Absolutely right. This is the Nixon Southern strategy was, Lyndon Johnson blew up basically white racists, largely in the South, but nationwide. And as Bill Moyers poignantly tells the story, he saw Lyndon Johnson the evening after he signed the Civil Rights Act. And Johnson said, I think I've lost the South for a generation, but it was the right thing to do. And I think that you're absolutely right. I think that this is all about promoting hate and fear, in this case of women, but it's part of that larger thing of if there's something to be hated or feared, then it's going to become a Republican talking point. Thank you, John. Well said. Very, very well said. Lorraine in Mount Victory, Ohio. Hey, Lorraine, what's up?
Hi. My comment's about Rush Limbaugh, and Limp Limbaugh had to have his Viagra paid for, so what does that make him? Oh, but I forgot. The Viagra prescription wasn't even his, was it?
No,
that
it was
just my comment.
Yeah, I'm guessing he actually paid for it himself because it was in the name of his psychologist. But thank you, Lorraine. Yeah. Oh, my. Joe in Long Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Basically, it's called rape. When men want to control women, it's rape. But a couple of things. After George Will's scolding of the GOP politicians, now John McCain is outraged over Rush's comment.
Right.
And then another thing, when it comes to saying you're sorry, anyone can say that they're sorry, but not everyone is able to ask for forgiveness. And in that sense, Rush failed. And then he had to do it on his website.
Yeah, and he did not ask for forgiveness. He said, I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluke for the insulting word choices. In other words, he chose the wrong insulting words.
Right. And then one thing I just read online is that AOL just pulled their ads from the Rush Limbaugh show.
So it's continuing. Very interesting. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Dave, listening on K-Talk in Newport Beach, California. Hey, Dave. Oh, Dave, I'm sorry. Let me put you on hold. I totally missed the time cue there. We'll be right back with more. 15 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. And, you know, lest we fail to note, by the way, austerity in Europe. Europe's unemployment rate overall, 10.7%. Germany's doing okay. Some of these countries are doing just fine, but Greece and Spain are doing so badly, they're dragging it all down. Why? Because they're doing the same thing John Kasich is doing in Ohio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
John Kasich just turned down federal aid for tornado victims. He said, no, we'd rather have people out of work than helped by the government. Austerity, yes.
Roll down the windows with the radio loud.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Ann in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program. What's up?
I have a question for you. I want to know whatever happened to the ability to sue for defamation of character.
It is.
And I'll leave it at that.
Sure.
I'd like to hear your comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Ann. Thank you very much for the call and the question. Here's Sandra Fluck talking about that. This is clip 15, Jacob, where she talks about stepping into the public arena. And before you hear this, let me just set this up. A public figure it's very, very difficult for a public figure to sue for defamation or slander. I'm in the public. If somebody says something about me, I mean, I can rebut it, I can challenge it, but I can't sue about it. And so arguably, Sandra Fluck, by saying that she would speak in public to Congress and by responding in the mass media, has made herself a national figure and can't sue. Now, on the other hand, there are some lawyers who think she can sue, and we'll see how, and she's considering it. We'll see how that plays out. But here's her initial comment on that, clip 15.
When you enter the public spotlight, you do know that this is possible. And as I've said, I'm not the first woman to be treated this way by numerous conservative media outlets. Hopefully I'll be the last.
And hopefully she will be. We'll see. And the clip 16, where she's going to go from here.
What I'm going to be doing from here on out is just continuing to do what I have been, sharing the stories of the women who contact me and really trying to make sure that their voices are being heard.
There you go. Dave in Newport Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, a couple quick things. Regarding your last comment, women in general ought to file a class action suit against Rush since he called everyone who uses contraceptives a slut. Secondly, just a few years ago, IMUS was taken off the air for using a word that's used by lots of rap singers, ho, which if you look up in the dictionary, doesn't even exist, whereas slut does. So if you follow that route, if you will, Rush ought to be taken off the air entirely.
Yeah, well, arguably. And in fact, speaking of Don Imus, here's what Don Imus had to say about Limbaugh. This is clip number 9, Jacob.
It's a vile personal attack of this woman, and it was sustained. What, Wednesday? Then they come back and double down on Thursday, they come back and double down on Friday, and then issue a lame apology on your website in which you say, I didn't mean to personally attack her, when you did attack her. I'd make him go down there and apologize to her face to face. Get on he owns a Gulfstream 4, get on it, go to Washington, take her to lunch and say, look, I'm sorry I said this stuff, and I'll never do it again, period. Now, he's an insincere pig. Pill popping pinhead.
A pill popping pinhead. Tim, and I'm not going to add anything to that. Tim in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm getting word that, you know, the hacktivist group Anonymous?
Yeah.
They have a woman's chapter called Anonymous, M-I-S-S, and they're going to go after Rush Limbaugh. And that's all I wanted to say.
Is that a prediction, or are you speaking with personal knowledge?
Personal knowledge.
Oh, very interesting.
Because they're mad.
Okay. Tim, thank you very much. I'll leave it at that, and we'll see what happens. Paul in Westover, Maryland. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Fine. Thanks for watching Free Speech
TV. I want to make it clear that free speech does not protect polite or nice speech. Free speech protects derogatory or hate speech. That is what free speech protects. Also,
and the Supreme Court ruled that in the Skokie, Illinois versus the American Nazi Party case back in the 1960s, 70s?
Yes, sir.
So, therefore...
Okay, also, well, therefore, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, well, I don't think anybody is suggesting that Rush Limbaugh should be taken off the air by the government because he's stepped out of bounds or something like that. I'm not suggesting that. I frankly don't think anybody else is. The question is the misogyny of the right that they use to distract people from the economic agenda of the right, which is basically rob the middle class and poor people and keep the poor so that the top 1% can get richer and richer and richer. From the day Reagan came into office, before Reagan came into office, from the 1930s until Reagan's presidency, the top 1%'s wealth grew at about the same rate as the bottom 99%'s wealth. You had a growing middle class. People who were poor were getting richer or wealthier or whatever the word is. It's not quite the right word. The middle class was doing better, and the very rich were doing better. But they were all doing better at about the same rate. You look at the curves. You see they all follow. And then Reagan comes into office, and all of a sudden the poor start getting poorer. The working class levels out, flattens out. And the rich have seen a 273% increase in their wealth in the years since Ronald Reagan took over. You know, so Reaganomics, this right wing, that's what it's all about. And then they go off on these things against women or about birth control or about, you know, Barack the Magic Negro, the song that Rush Limbaugh, you know, had played on his thing. They go after race. They go after guns. They go after God. They go after gays. They go after all these things as ways to say to fearful people, particularly blue-collar working people, especially blue-collar working white people, be afraid of those folks. Be afraid of somebody else. Join us. We're the ones who will protect you. We're the law and order guys. When, in fact, that's not what they're all about at all. What they're really all about is just taking everybody's money. So, no, I agree with you. This is not a constitutional issue. This is not a First Amendment issue. This is not a free speech issue. This is an overreach of the right seeing blowback. That was my whole point about these cycles that the Republican Party goes through, where they get really, really crazy with Barry Goldwater, and then they back off. I mean, going backwards, they back off with Dwight Eisenhower, and then they get really crazy with the Congress of 46, and then they back off in the 30s, and they get really crazy in the 1920s. Or going forward, they back off with Nixon, they get really crazy with Reagan.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And most recently, they got really crazy with George W. Bush, and I think that they're starting to go back and kind of put the mask back on again. Doesn't mean their policies are changing, but their external faces. Hey friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving. Starting next week, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time.
Keep me in mind. Somewhere down the road you might get lonely.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Rush Limbaugh, apparently just a few minutes ago or in the last hour or so, on his radio program, made a long... This TPM Livewire is where I'm getting this from. Rush Limbaugh opened his radio show Monday, that would have been an hour and a half ago, with a long explanation for why he issued his rare public apology to Sandra Fluke, the Georgetown law student he had called a slut on the air. Limbaugh said his apology was sincere, but that his biggest failing was adopting the tone of the left. You get this? Another non-apology. He says, this is the mistake I made. In fighting them on this issue last week, I became like them. In other words, going after this woman, he became like her? Like she was calling him something? That's incredible. Do you have the clip? You're getting there. Okay. He says, against my own instincts, against my own knowledge, against everything I know to be right and wrong, I descended to their level when I used those two words to describe Sandra Fluck. That was my error. That's Limbaugh. Unapologizing for his apology, in my opinion. It's amazing. Charles in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Mr. Hartman, it's an honor, sir. You know, my comment is that for years now, I've been scratching my head about the fact that a gentleman, I won't even call it a gentleman, that Limbaugh can get the amount of money he gets to sit in front of a microphone and expound the racist and sexist hate that he does. You know, I'm a left-wing liberal teamster. I've got two artificial hips. I'm doing a job I'm not supposed to be able to do. And even if someone were to pay me that amount of money, not a good conscience, could I sit there and expound the racist and sexist stuff that he does? And to me, it's a overall symptom of the sickness of our society and culture, whereas some people in entertainment and some sports figures and a guy like Limbaugh get paid this overwhelming amount of money, whereas people that really do contribute to the betterment of society, like Penn Jillette says, you know, brain surgeons, you know, they need to get paid even more. And the fact that Mr. Limbaugh has this podium is just disgraceful. And by the way, Tom, I tell people, well, of course, I have a friend or two that listens to Limbaugh, and, you know, it's their saving grace. And I said, you know who Mr. Tom Hartman is, you know? Well, he's a talk show host. He's written several books. He's an expert on ADHD. He still runs a nonprofit for needy kids in Vermont. Him and his wife have, from my understanding, dealt with several businesses in Europe, abroad, and here in America. You know, and they don't even know who Mr. Tom Hartman is. And, to me, it's the aberration and skewering of values in America that I think we all have to watch out for.
Well, thanks for the kind words, Charles, and thanks for spreading the word. And I think that I think you're onto something that, you know, with Limbaugh getting his $400 million contract, although I would say that he got that because he was doing the work of the hard right, the hard right that has an economic interest in having this be a hard right nation. But thank you, Charles. Spot on. Doug in Hamul, California. Doug, it says you disagree with me.
Well, of course, Tom. How can Rush Limbaugh has nothing, absolutely nothing to be apologized. Just because he implied that she was a slut or a prostitute.
He didn't imply it. Called her that. And beyond that, he accused her of things that she didn't say. He said she said things that she didn't say. Well, she wasn't talking about herself. She was talking about a friend or a roommate who had to take birth control pills to control a polycystic ovarian something or other, you know, a disease. And this woman, when she was no longer able to afford the birth control pills, became sick enough that she had to have a hysterectomy. That was the point.
Yeah, and the point is this.
And Limbaugh says she wants to have more sex. She never said that.
That's right. Why should the American taxpayer have to pay for anything?
She never asked the American taxpayer to pay for anything.
Yes, she did.
No, she didn't.
What is she in front of Congress for? Women's health.
Because this was a debate about whether private for-profit health insurance companies, when they provide private for-profit health insurance paid for by employers, and that insurance includes pharmaceuticals, whether you can carve out exemptions within those pharmaceuticals for birth control pills and not for Viagra. And if you're going to start carving out exemptions because of the conscience of the employer, then Doug, and if you think that that's how it should be, I'm assuming that you think that's how it should be, Doug, right?
Well, I think that you guys make the false.
Well, no. Let me just ask you the question here, Doug. Do you agree with Limbaugh and the Republicans that an employer should be able to say to a private health insurance company, I want you to not offer these particular services or pharmaceuticals to my employees because of my religious beliefs? Do you agree with that?
Of course not.
You don't? You don't think that the Catholic Church should be able to say, we don't want to be, we're the employer, we're paying the bill for the health insurance, we don't want the health insurance to include birth control pills?
No, the Catholic Church can
ask its own, the Catholic Church can ask its own providers, right, within its hospital,
right,
whether it's going to provide contraceptions or not.
Okay. And you want, and you want that enshrined in law, so that right of the Catholic Church. Do I have that correct?
Correct. You can get,
okay.
So
you're an advocate for Sharia law becoming part of law in the United States, because, you know, if it works for Catholics, why shouldn't it work for Muslims?
That's not even close. That's a false analogy.
So Doug, when you and the Republicans and all these other guys start promoting Sharia law, I get baffled.
No, it's not Sharia law, and you know it.
What's the difference between Sharia law and Catholic law?
What's the difference? It's called humiliation of Jews and Christians and non-Muslims and second-class citizens.
No, Sharia law has to do with what you can eat, how you know, medicine. I mean, this is Doug, do some homework. I'm just astounded by all these Republicans who want to impose Sharia law in the United States and any other religion and don't want to own up to it. Here's Limbaugh's non-apology from today.
They've demonstrated over and over a willingness to say or do anything to advance their agenda. It's what they do.
Oh, my. That's what we do.
It's what we fight against here every day.
Yes.
But this is the mistake I made.
The mistake you made?
In fighting them on this issue last week, I became like them.
Oh, yes.
Against my own instincts, against my own knowledge, against everything I know to be right and wrong, I descended to their level when I used those two words to describe Sandra Fluke. That was my error.
That was his error.
I became like them.
He became...
And I feel very badly about that.
Yes. In fact,
I've tried to maintain a very high degree of integrity and independence on this program. Nevertheless, those two words.
And here's his high degree of integrity and independence. Why do we have feminism, for example, in the United States? Rush Limbaugh's thoughts on that.
I have long told you, Undeniable Truth of Life number 24, written back in 1987, feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society. And even to this day, people poo-poo this and say it's insensitive. How could you possibly say something like that? Well, because I mean it, because I believe there's something to it.
Okay, and black guy decides that he's going to run for president, right? African-American senator, President Barack Obama. Boom! Limbaugh comes out of the gate with us. We need to edit down the intro.
Barack, the magic Negro, lives in D.C. The L.A. Times, they call him that 'cause he's not authentic like me.
And on it goes, you know. So this is the high-minded dialogue talking about NASCAR drivers. Here's Rush Limbaugh about the what do you expect from a woman driver, right?
Danica Patrick said, "I leave it up to the government to make good decisions for America." She was talking about Obama mandating that the Catholic Church provide contraception. What do you expect from a woman driver?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Nichols in St. Augustine, Florida. Hey, Nichols, or Nicholas. How am I saying that? How do you say it?
Nick's fine.
Okay, Nick, what's
Nick's
up?
Fine, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. First, real quick, I just want to say I haven't heard in a little while, but thanks for the Higgins updates.
Sure.
Cat-related updates. It's really cool to have a smart guy on the radio. I actually have cat updates. I lost a cat this past year, so it means a lot to me. Second, I wanted, which kind of sort of, believe it or not, leads me into my other point, which I tried to call about a couple months ago. This whole situation, I find this to be another symptom with Rush and this contraception, and I'd like to know your thoughts on it. This is just another attack by the right wing on healthcare and the idea of healthcare for all. I mean,
well, it could be. I think it's misogyny. I think that this is more of the idea, the male entitlement idea, and the extension of white privilege and all of these other things. I think that this is the powerful white guys trying to hang on to their power. They didn't like women coming into the workforce, which is why Rush attacks feminism, because that was really about power. And it was about women being able to come into the workforce. They don't want African Americans in the workforce, at least as president of the United States. I mean, on it goes. So, Nick, that's my take on it. But you may be onto something. Thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service in just a few minutes. And I do want to get to Newt Gingrich, what he would do if he was president.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Limbaugh.
Well, it's Susie Walk.
There and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self Empowerment. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, we can go there. We can go to the Limbaugh story as our lead, if you wish.
Okay. It's been a major topic of conversation today. And I think that the important piece here is that the Republican Party tends to go in these cycles over the years of getting really out there crazy and then pulling back and pretending to be moderate when really the entire agenda is economic. And they're right now in the process of pulling back and trying to be moderate. I believe the cycle's turning that way, and Limbaugh doesn't realize it. Bill O'Reilly doesn't realize it. Now, let me toss it to you.
Well, occasionally Bill O'Reilly does, you know, like when he was questioning Mitt Romney last week on, you know, why do you say these things? Why do you say that stuff about the ponchos at NASCAR? Why do you say that about, you know, knowing the owner? Why do you say that stuff? I mean, he gets that. And
I think that's his version of a tough question. Why didn't, you know, if he really wanted to ask a hard question, he should have asked Romney, why is it that the tax plan you're proposing raises taxes on Walmart greeters and cuts taxes on you and other billionaires?
Well,
okay. Anyway.
Well, Rush Limbaugh today did talk about Sandra Fluke, said his apology was heartfelt. So he's always tried to maintain a very high degree of integrity and independence on the program. But what he kept going back to was that the two words were inappropriate. Slut and prostitute really was what he was referring to. He also played a bit of a victim, talked about Democrats. But this is what he kept coming back to. He never referenced the sex tapes being shown online. He never referenced who bought her condoms in the sixth grade. He never referenced the entire episode. He kept talking about the two words. So it was really very bizarre indeed.
And he has not apologized for attacking this young woman. In fact, his written apology says, I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluck for the insulting word choices.
Right.
In other words, he should have chosen different insults.
Exactly. Meanwhile, some women from Vote Vets, a coalition of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, released a letter today saying that American Forces Network should drop Rush Limbaugh from its programming.
Interesting. Now, we're being heard right now on American Forces Network, so I'm not going to
understood.
That.
I just thought I would mention that is going on.
Yep.
Meantime, here at the White House, President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel have met. Then Prime Minister Netanyahu goes on to AIPAC and will speak there this afternoon. Ahead of the meeting, they both spoke. So we don't know actually what happened in the meeting. I imagine it was blunt and frank, which sounds like a comedy act, and that's exactly what it was not. The president said that the U.S. will always have Israel's back when it comes to Israel's security, talked about common values, incredible people-to-people contacts, also saying it's unacceptable from Israel's perspective to have a country with a nuclear weapon, also saying it was unacceptable from the United States' point of view as well. Netanyahu talking about the deep ties between the two countries, but also saying that Israel must have the ability always to defend itself against any threat. Israel has the right, the sovereign right, to make its own decisions. That's why you appreciate, Mr. President, that Israel must reserve the right to defend itself.
Okay, we'll see how all this chest thumping plays out.
Exactly. And it's interesting, there is a poll out today from the Hill newspaper on this issue and also on Syria. And it shows that the American public, and this was a 1,000 people, and it was done on Thursday, just as rebels were retreating from a key center of resistance near Homs, and of course as all this talk of Iran was going on, showing that people are not particularly interested in getting involved. 52% of respondents said they would be supportive of an Israeli strike. 41% were somewhat opposed, but only 21% were very supportive of a U.S. strike.
This is in Syria.
We're on Iran now.
Oh, in Iran. Okay,
right. And 21% were somewhat supportive. 32% were very opposed. 20% were somewhat opposed. When it came to getting involved in Syria, 57% of respondents said the Obama administration should leave the bleep situation alone. Only 25% think the U.S. should get more involved. And this was just at the time that Homs, people were leaving Homs so that people were aware of what was happening. And these were likely voters.
I think that the American people have, after seeing the horrors of Afghanistan and Iraq, of unnecessary wars, just are not, we're becoming non-interventionist. We're becoming, I guess that's the word.
I think people are moving into that phase.
Yeah, and thus the popularity of Ron Paul, frankly.
Yes, indeed. Now, you may have heard that BP has reached a settlement with a number of plaintiffs, about 110,000 private claims, including fishermen who lost their livelihoods because of the Gulf oil spill. This is a claim of about $7.8 billion out-of-court settlement, which has stopped the case from going to trial today. Mm-hmm. Although the DOJ says that they are pleased about this, but it doesn't address its responsibility for the harms, and they're pursuing a negligence case for the explosion, which caused millions of barrels of oil to be leaked and killed 11 workers and polluted beaches. Well, BP warned yesterday that it could not guarantee that this out-of-court settlement with plaintiffs would be finally signed, because there were some loose ends still to be tied up. The devil is in the detail, admitted BP's group general counsel in a briefing call with Citi analysts, that's like Wall Street analysts, in London after the outline deal was signed before the weekend.
Is this lawyer speak for there are a few people who are holding out and we want to force them to take pennies on the dollar? Or is this lawyer speak for we want the U.S. government to give us immunity?
I think it's probably a combination of everything. They've got 45 days to try and get a good deal going, to work to finalize it. Yeah, but it's not done. Everybody thought it was done, and it's not.
Okay. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment, the sponsor. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, there are other things going on beyond Rush Limbaugh today. The Federal Reserve is doing stress tests of banks. The big banks. The too big to fail banks that we got as a result of George W. Bush's bank bailout. When former Goldman Sachs CEO and then Treasury Secretary in the Bush administration, Henry Paulson, said, with trembling hands, we have to give $800 billion to these banksters. Now, without asking any questions, please, so that we can bail out AIG, because if AIG goes down, Goldman Sachs goes down. And that's really basically what it was. So anyhow, the Fed is doing these stress tests, and the banksters don't want the results released. Big battle going on in Washington, D.C. right now, under our noses, probably pretty much not being reported by the corporate press, the mainstream press, that shares interlocking boards of directors with most of these big banks. But when Bank of America starts jacking up fees on their customers and is willing to deal with the bad publicity that comes with it, and when several million customers have left the big banks and moved to credit unions, that says to me that these banks are still in trouble. The structural stuff has not changed. We should have put back into place Glass-Steagall and separated out the banking gambling operations from the banking operations. Because, you know, if you've got money in one of these big five banks, these big six banks that hold total assets of $9.5 trillion, that's three-quarters of the U.S. annual GDP held by six banks. And one of these banks goes down. It could be the 1930s all over again. People just take, the bank says, sorry. You know, if you've got more than the FDIC amount, that's gone. And the FDIC, you know, the federal government, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, put into place by Franklin Roosevelt in 1935, the FDIC starts paying out, you know, oh, you had $500,000, your retirement savings, whatever, stashed in that bank. Well, sorry, you only get whatever it is now. It was $250,000 for a while, but I think that was temporary. It used to be $100,000, $150,000. I believe it's $250,000 right now. I'm not certain. So, but it's in that neighborhood. Anything over that, not insured. And in fact, I'm looking at all these assets that are going out of the big banks. And there hasn't been, I don't think this is in response to Occupy Wall Street. I don't think that the reason why hundreds of billions of dollars have been pulled out of the big banks and moved into other places. Now, we've seen a significant growth in credit unions, which also have federal and deposit insurance, and they are basically user-owned co-ops. Everybody who puts their money into a credit union becomes a member of the credit union and has a vote in the credit union and who's going to be on the board of directors. You can run for the office of CEO of the credit union. In fact, you know, I met a senior officer of a credit union in Portland when I was shopping credit unions when we lived there, who had started out as a guy who was a depositor. Decided to get active inside the credit union. It's a co-op. But I'm wondering, and I've been looking around for this, and I've not found it anywhere, and if any of you have this information, drop into our chat room and share it with us. It's free. It's over at TomHartmann.com. You don't have to, you know, jump through any hoops other than just registering for the site, and you don't get spammed or anything like that. We don't sell our email list. It's just drop by the chat room. And share the link with us, share the information with us, because I've been looking for this. I haven't been able to find it. How much of this money that is going out of these big banks is actually very wealthy people in America saying, you know, some very wealthy person sitting on, you know, 10, 15, 20 million bucks that's in Bank of America saying, this is not a good bet anymore. And the FDIC only guarantees this up to $250,000 or whatever it is. So I'm going to move this, and some of it gets moved into the local credit union, the local liquid amount, right? You move $1 million into the local credit union so that you can make pay the maid and the chauffeur and the butler and all that kind of stuff, you know, the living expenses. And take the other $5 million and stick it in the Swiss bank. Or some other offshore bank. Put it in a German bank. Put it in a British bank. Put it someplace else. How much of this money is moving outside the United States? You know, we're seeing this happen in Greece right now. Wealthy people in Greece are moving their money out of that country as fast as they can, because they see a country that's being taken down by the big banksters. Keep in mind, Greece did not qualify for entry into the European Union, because their GDP to debt ratio and their GDP to deficit ratio was too high. And so Goldman Sachs came in and said, we will loan you the money that you can put in your treasury and make it look like your numbers are clean, and we just won't call it a loan. So you don't have to list this on your balance sheet as debt. We'll call it a currency swap of some sort that's like half done. And so Greece and Goldman Sachs jiggered the the bookkeeping, basically, for Greece so that Greece could join the euro. And they gave up the drachma and they took the euro. If they hadn't given up the drachma, they'd be in fine shape right now. And I predict within a year they are going to pull out of the EU and they are going to go back to the drachma. Because if they don't, they're going to end up a wholly owned subsidiary of Germany and France, who are pretty much driving the train, and to a smaller extent, Brussels and Luxembourg and, you know, some of the wealthier European countries, Central European countries. The Scandinavian countries, they didn't drink that Kool-Aid. Sweden still has their kroner. Iceland still has their currency. I think it's called a kroner. But Greece just wanted to be part of the EU. Goldman Sachs said, hey, we'll help you out, by the way. We're going to make some fees on this, you know. And boy, did they. But I'm looking at this with the banks here in the United States and the fact that they don't want the stress test results to be publicized. There's a very good piece about this over at Fire Dog Lake right now, by the way, firedoglake.com, Jane Hampshire's website. And I'm looking at that going, is this, was it T.S. Eliot or E.E. Cummings? You know, We Are the Hollow Men. This is, I think it was T.S. Eliot. This is, I think the last time I said this, I attributed it to E.E. Cummings. This is the way the world will end, not with a bang, but a whimper. I mean, maybe it will be a bang. Is this a crash coming? So there's that. And we can talk about Limbaugh if you want. I see, you know, half my lines are Limbaugh. Every line is full. We'll pick up your calls after this. But there's that. And then there's John Kasich. I don't think most Americans realize that John Kasich he was a Fox commentator, and he got elected governor of Ohio with a $1.25 million donation that Fox News made to the Republican Governors Association that they funneled into Ohio to get him elected, and hundreds of thousands of dollars in contributions from the Koch brothers. So here's a guy who is about as hard right as you can get, John Kasich in Ohio. And he's got a town, Moscow, Ohio, just outside of Cincinnati, that has been leveled. And he will not take federal funds for it. And people in his state are going, you what? I mean, Kentucky is taking Mitch Daniels in Indiana, another Republican. Not quite as crazy as Kasich. Mitch Daniels is saying, hey, bring in FEMA. We got towns that were leveled. We need some help. Kasich is like, nope, we're going to do this on our own. What's going on?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Either this guy has drank the Kool-Aid so completely and read the Ayn Rand books, or the Koch brothers have big plans for him.
When I hear the music play and I hear the children sing, I know together anything is possible.
Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Cindy in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Cindy, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Very well.
I wanted to mention that perhaps one of the reasons that the oxycodone addled idiot Rush Limbaugh plays so well with his dodo heads is because he's under the auspices of satire, and you can get away with quite a bit calling it satire. Also, I'd like to just remind you and tell me if I'm wrong, but as many good things as Johnson did, and I didn't really care for him, even though I am a Democrat, he knew the value of stirring up social disorder and getting people after each other when he said, as you could make the worst white man think he's better than the best black man, they'll never notice as you pick their pockets. How do you like that cynical little comment?
Yeah. Was he speaking of Democrats or Republicans?
He's speaking of people as a whole.
Yeah. I've heard the quote. I don't know the context, so I can't comment on it in the context of LBJ.
But
you know,
pretty much what they're doing, of course.
Yeah, of course.
They want to stir up all these social and personal issues that really shouldn't even be out there,
yep,
just to distract them from what their real agenda is.
And they've been doing it for 150 years, and arguably longer than that. You're absolutely right, Cindy. And with regard to Rush Limbaugh, and with regard to Rush Limbaugh being satire, arguably. I know he's used that excuse in the past. Oh, that's just satire. You know, when he did the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox and Barack the Magic Negro and all those other things. But it's not how he presents himself on the air. He calls himself the Doctor of Democracy. He's talking about these really serious issues. So, Cindy, thank you for the call. I think you can call yourself commentary or, you know, it's the First Amendment. I mean, you know, you can say what you want, but Virginia in Portland. Hey, Virginia, thanks for listening to KPOJ. What's up?
Hey, Tom, two quick things. First of all, I think it's Sandra Fluke, like flute, but with a K.
Okay.
When you mispronounce it the way Limbaugh, I think, intentionally did, you're dangerously close to George Carlin's seven forbidden words.
Yeah, okay. I think I mispronounced it that way in my newscast today, but I understand that it's pronounced like book or look, so it'd be fluck.
Okay.
So
what I wanted to say was, these people, it's the culture war, it's the social conservatives, but all they ever talk about is abortion, contraception, LGBT stuff, single moms, out-of-wedlock babies. These folks are totally fixated on other people's pants.
Yeah.
No normal person spends all their time worrying about somebody else's sexual activity.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sickos, they're perverts, they're deviants, they're nuts.
Okay, good.
And I think even the birtherism issue, talking about misogynists, which assumes that a mother's citizenship doesn't confer citizenship so that Barack could have been born anywhere, is just an extension of this same thing. These people, they're certifiable. They need medication. Somebody needs to counsel them.
Yeah, it's like his mother doesn't count. It's only his father. Virginia, excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. And it stands alone. Joe in Seattle. Hey, Joe. Thanks for listening to AM 1090. What's up?
I always listen, Tom. Number one, just to save that long thing, just call him an oxymoron. I think he single-handedly redefined the word.
Okay.
And I have some questions, because while I blame a lot of stuff on Rush, I think the real problem is the Mrs. Ditto heads.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? Are they so busy making little dinners and stuff to keep those Ditto heads happy that they're not noticing? I'm telling you, a few less dinners and a little less negligee and stuff like that, that's where the power lies.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the planet is women, and they get to vote in private, and I think that needs to be stress.
Yeah,
they get to vote in private.
Yeah, and more women need to be brought out. Need to be voting. Thank you very much for the call, Joe in Topeka, Kansas, watching us on Free Speech TV on Dish or Dish Network or DirecTV. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Well, it causes such hysteria whenever you or anybody else makes that Sharia connection to folks like the guy that called earlier.
Republicans can't handle that. They're perfectly willing to have one particular religion define the laws of our nation, as long as it's a Christian religion. But when you say, well, what about Islam? All of a sudden they get hysterical and they start stuttering.
Well, but I'd like to suggest another way to make that reference that might actually cause a few of those folks to connect some dots.
Okay.
Islam comes from the same Judaic root as Christianity does.
Sure, it's not even the Judaic root, it's the Abrahamic root.
Yeah, right. But Sharia is nothing more or less than a translation of Mosaic law.
Yeah, it's a variation on kosher.
Exactly.
It's the Levitical laws.
And I think it, rather than simply throwing that out with nothing in their heads except the Islamic connection, if that were kind of mentioned once in a while, that might cause some people to make that connection.
I will do it, Joe. Thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Bobby in Phoenix, Arizona. Got a minute to the break. Bobby, what's up?
Hi. I am establishing a political commentary site, and in the middle of it, I took time out to find out about all of Rush's advertisers. I've called everybody I can call from a couple of lists, and I will be emailing this afternoon. And one other thing, I'm doing some history about, you know, how our country got started, and there's so many similar circumstances to what is going on today to what was going on then. It's almost frightening.
Yeah. Well, there's always been coarseness in the political discourse in the United States. It goes up and down. It oscillates. With regard to contacting advertisers, respectfully, I would suggest that if there are shows that you like, you should call those advertisers and thank them. If there are shows you don't like, just don't listen. I'm not so much a fan of criticizing as of praising. I think praise works really, really well. Bobby, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening on KPHX in Phoenix.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
In fact, listen to KPHX. Bobby, you're listening on KPHX. Particularly the local advertisers. Give them a call and tell them that you heard them on the show, and thank you. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very leucomelanously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for your brain. The good, 10,000 GM vehicle owners. More than 10,000 current and former GM vehicle owners are calling on the company to stop funding and supporting the Heartland Institute, the now infamous think tank that wants to make global warming denying a part of schools' curriculum. Since 2010, GM has contributed $30,000 to Heartland. In reaction to the petition by customers, GM Director of Policy Greg Martin said that the Heartland Institute gives, quote, careful and considerate thought to complex policy issues, end quote. Yeah, right. Anyway, it's nice to see how more and more Americans are becoming aware of the problems that corporate greed plays in our society and government. Hopefully, GM can be one corporation that decides to listen to the consumer and not the bottom line. The bad. The TSA. It was another rough PR week for the TSA. On Wednesday, TSA agents at Lihue Airport in Hawaii forced a woman to prove that her breast pump was real by making her use it in the women's restroom. After publicly humiliating the woman, the TSA apologized for what it called a big misunderstanding. And on Saturday, TSA officials at JFK Airport, New York, allowed a woman to go through security with a dagger in her bag, even though they had confiscated a bottle of liquid that was in the same bag. The woman was eventually arrested when the TSA agents finally realized they'd made a slight mistake. Isn't it time we rework our airport security system to make it about common sense rather than public humiliation and gross error? And the very, very ugly Kirk Cameron. In an interview with Piers Morgan, Hollywood teen heartthrob turned radical conservative Kirk Cameron made some startling remarks about homosexuality. Cameron told Morgan that homosexuality is unnatural. I think it's detrimental and ultimately destructive to so many of the foundations of civilization. When asked about the possibility of having a gay son, Cameron responded, I wouldn't say that's great, son, as long as you're happy. There are all sorts of issues we need to wrestle through in our lives. Just because you feel one way doesn't mean we should act on everything we feel. End of quote. The blatant forms of intolerance, ignorance, and hatred that Cameron displays are the only things, frankly, destructive to our civilization, and they are very, very ugly. Shows the Koch brothers right now are engaged in a battle to take over the Cato Institute. The Cato Institute was originally started as the, if my recollection serves me right, it was the David Koch Foundation. Might have been the Charles Koch Foundation, but I think it was the David Koch Foundation. And it operated as that for 2 years, and then they changed their name to the Cato Institute. And David and Charles had two seats on the board, and then there were two other board members. And I believe one of them was Ed Crane, who I remember particularly because there's this famous quote about the two Santa Claus theory where he says, where Ed Crane is quoted as saying, when Newt Gingrich heard, and he names a bunch of other right-wingers, heard about Jude Wininsky's two Santa Claus theory, he thought he had died and gone to heaven. And in any case, I'm not sure if it was Ed or somebody else, but one of the members of the Cato Institute's board has either died or retired. And so now the Koch brothers are stacking the board. It looks like they're trying to turn this thing into an anti-Obama machine rather than just a libertarian think tank. I mean, a libertarian think tank is bad enough. It's almost an oxymoron. But it's fascinating stuff. Oh, and the numbers are in for 2010. Who made the most money? Where did it go? A total of 93% of all the income gains in 2010. 2010 was the first year of the recovery. 93% of all the income gains made that year went to the top 1%. The bottom 90% of Americans lost on average $127. The top 1% gained on average $105,637. Pretty amazing, huh? James in Franklin, Tennessee. Hey, James, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me, Tom. I'd like to say that birth control and abortion has helped cut down on the crime rate in this country immensely, more than it's given credit for.
Well, there's a book called Freakonomics that makes that case, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe this is so, you know, from everything I can find out about it. It does it by eliminating pregnancies in unwed mothers that can't keep up the children. And who?
Well, it's
really
not so much that. It's,
I mean, no.
According to the logic of Freakonomics, it's that if a child is not wanted, that child is more likely to be either neglected or abused throughout their lifetime and grow up to be somebody who is antisocial or asocial or socially dysfunctional and more likely to end up in prison or unemployed because they're unemployable. And therefore, the availability of birth control prevents unwanted pregnancies and thus prevents unwanted children. And wouldn't it be great if every child in the world was wanted? But, you know, that's just not the case. But, James, good point, and thank you for calling and making it. I think the science on that's actually fairly solid. Leonard in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Leonard, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yes, I'm calling you from Phoenix. And first, thanks of all for the information you put out and for everybody that calls in. I don't know what we would do here without your progressive show, because here in the Phoenix area, we have very conservative, I would call, hate talk radio. But I just want to call and let you know, just give you an update. Our recall of Governor Jan Brewer is still continuing, and we're just asking all our brothers and sisters, like-minded Arizona citizens, if they want to help light a candle and sign a signature or circulate a petition. Over 120,000 people are expected to attend the Tucson Festival of Books this Saturday and Sunday from 9:30 to 5:30, and we really need help. We know that if we get enough signatures to put on, to get her recalled, that we're really going to get change coming back to Arizona. So all I can say is, Tom, thank you. The mainstream media will not report anything, even though we've got thousands of signatures, and we have hope here in Arizona, and we're showing that by recalling this governor. So in Tucson this Saturday and Sunday, we'd really appreciate it if people could come sign or help us circulate our petitions. Light a candle. We'll relight our state of Arizona.
Great.
If we
Leonard, do you have a website for it?
Yeah, thank you. Recallbrewer.com. And, great. You know, I will respond. We will respond. We're in this together. We don't have the big money, but we have each other, and we want to change our state for hope.
You got it.
Again.
Recallbrewer.com. Thank you, Leonard. Kathleen in Sacramento, you've got something going on in Sacramento. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, I'm a resident in California, in Dixon, near Sacramento. There's a protest at the Capitol, state capitol, to protest the high cost of state higher education here in California. They keep rising and rising.
Right.
And it's a very well-organized march. And some groups have even marched from far away over the week to the Capitol.
Yeah.
And so I want to say yay to those people. And they even marched to our town, to Dixon, and wish I could be out there with them. But also I wanted to comment, I was very disappointed. I love your slogan, where smart people get their news. And what happens when smart people don't have you on their TV like they usually do, because I'm not at home today, I was listening to local news, and the coverage regarding the protest, there's some of the, it's a group, different groups have united to come together at the Capitol in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And one of those groups participating is, some of them are Occupy Movement.
Right.
And some of the language, well, all of the language that I heard regarding the Occupy group on our local news was very negative, and for implying that if there was any trouble, then, you know, it would be Occupy that we would probably be coming from. And but don't worry, because there's plenty of security, the CHP,
amazing,
and et cetera.
Yeah,
et cetera.
There has
and
been.
I was so,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. There was one. I'm sorry. This was the one point. They actually said. Some of the protesters here are concerned that occupiers have their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, they don't have, they have the same agenda.
Yeah.
They're just willing to stay and occupy until the 99% are not only heard, but are respected and some action is taken.
You're absolutely right. And Kathleen, thank you for the call. Well said. They're willing to stand up, and that's something more of us should be doing. Wesley in Minneapolis. Hey, Wesley, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment about the birth control issue. I think that the reason it keeps coming up is to give us, the general public, something to fight and argue about and get our attention away from the real fact that what we need to do is establish a health care plan in this country for everybody.
Yep. Every time this issue comes up, what it does for me is highlights, and thank you, Wesley, for pointing it out because you were so right, highlights the fact that we don't have a national single-payer health care system. And if we did, we wouldn't be having this debate. Having employer-driven health insurance then basically puts the employer in a position where, you know, if they're going to provide health insurance and the health insurance conflicts with their values, then they've got a moral conundrum. And we shouldn't be putting employers in that position, both from, you know, the point of view of not putting employers in that bad position, and also from the point of view of also not putting employers in the position of having the ability or the need, if they define it as a moral need, to dictate to their employees what their own personal morality is going to be, or what their own personal, you know, what's going to be available to them. We need Medicare. Thank you, Wesley, for the call. We need Medicare Part E, E for everybody. Just drop the Medicare eligibility age to zero and, you know, raise taxes enough to pay for it. We will save a fortune. I mean, there won't be millionaires in the health insurance industry, but we'll save
a
fortune.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And this is something that, you know, a number of good politicians have been pushing for a long time, and it's something, starting with Harry Truman, and we need to be pushing again.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy.
There you go. Let's make that happen. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Judy in Cape Coral, Florida. Hey, Judy, thanks for listening to Sirius XM. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was calling about my mother, mm-hmm. who's dead now, but she was on birth control pills until she was 79. She had COPD, and it was a prescription, I guess, to regulate her hormones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not unusual. 14% of American women are taking birth control pills for things that have nothing to do with contraception.
And she needed to get them through her Medicare.
Yeah.
Or she couldn't afford it.
Yeah, there you go.
And it was part of her regimen that she had to take them.
Well said. Judy, thank you very much for the call. Mary in Chicagoland, Illinois. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I have to say that with this Rush Limbaugh thing, I don't know if the FCC or whoever is in charge of the radio broadcasts are going to impose a fine or anything like that on him just to protect our American values.
No, they're not. He has not stepped into that territory where the FCC can squash you like a bug. And so this is purely between him, the company that syndicates him, his advertisers, and his listeners. And
also the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And at this election time, he just needs to know that the whole world is watching and listening.
Yeah. I think it is. Mary, thank you for the call. Well said. Frank in Port Charlotte, Florida. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to tell you two things. You know, I think you're wrong. If you didn't listen to Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and them, you wouldn't know how stupid and dumb they really are, you know.
But, well, it's been...
The other thing I want to tell you is, you know, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
You know, there back in the 30s, I come from the 30s, there was four labor leaders, that McDonnell, Lewis, Ruther, and I think of Frisium and for transportation.
Yep.
And if you remember Ruther,
Walter Ruther,
the fact that he was an auto worker president.
Yep.
And he said that we are way behind in this innovation in this country. That's how they got the 40-hour week, and you know all the benefits that the union got for the workers. We are so far behind these guys, these politicians. They're not thinking ahead. They're not thinking of the future. They're thinking of themselves right now. That's all.
Yeah, tragically.
They don't even consider the fact that the working man organized to better himself. And
yep.
The people hate the unions. You know, they hate the unions.
Well,
the unions is the one that created all these.
That's absolutely right. And if we had more unions, then in 2010,
right.
when we recovered, 93% of all the income gains wouldn't have just gone to the top 1%. Frank, excellent point. Thank you for making it. Anthony in Detroit, listening on WDTW. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Glad you're there. Love your show. Been listening for many years. You're great, great.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Where is Gloria Allred on this case? Is she always coming to defense of them pervert Republican guys that assault women, you know, and attacking the women or coming to defense of the women? I mean,
yeah.
When some other factor, some other sector of the
I have no idea where she is. It'll be interesting to watch and see if she does pop up. Thanks for that, Ed in Portland. Hey, Ed, thanks for listening to KPOJ. What's up?
Thanks for taking the call. You know, there was a caller earlier trying to explain why Rush Limbaugh's television show went off the air, and I need to correct him. When Rush Limbaugh was on the air, I don't even think cable existed. He was on broadcast television, and you actually have to have real numbers back in those days, or you'll lose your show, and that's what happened to him.
Yeah, and the same thing happened to Savage. They just couldn't grab an audience, and both their shows went down. Because of it. And that's, you know, that's life in the big city. Thanks a lot for the call. Ray in Riverside, California, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking the call. Just a quick point. I wanted to highlight the fact that these right-wing pundits, they have a function. And unfortunately, they have been very successful. Their function is to push the political spectrum to the right.
Yes, of course.
And they have been successful to such a degree that even Reagan looks like a liberal right now.
Yep, you're absolutely
even,
right.
Even Romney, all the crazy talk that they're putting out there makes Romney look like a moderate. So I think that's their function. They don't think that everybody's going to believe everything they say, but they're talking mainly to their own base. And their historical function has been to just push the political spectrum further and further to the right.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much. Harold in Cadillac, Michigan. Hey, Harold, what's up?
Hey, I consider myself a progressive. I listen to all kinds of stations. Somebody on the left, an author, said this quote, when you find yourself nodding your head to what you're listening to, change the station.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what your take is on this.
It depends on what you're listening to. I think it's pretty straightforward stuff. There are two reasons, I think, principally why people listen to political talk radio, if that's what you're talking about, whether it's conservative or whether it's progressive. The first is to validate their worldview, to say, yeah, okay, I'm not the only one out here who thinks like this. I'm not crazy. I think the second is the more important one, and that is to learn to get the information to win the water cooler wars. So that whether they're conservative or liberal, they want the talking points, they want the information, they want the data, they want to be able to have a take on the news, and so that they can have that discussion or that argument over Thanksgiving dinner with their crazy brother-in-law or with the person who works in the cubicle next to them or whatever it may be, and be able to have an intelligent and informed discussion. And so they're looking not just for the news and the facts, but also for some opinion on it. And that's what I try to provide on this program. I know that's what Rush Limbaugh tries to do on his right-wing show. And you know, we're speaking to different audiences, I think, frankly. I'm guessing that most of the people who listen to my program are progressive. Certainly our calls are a reflection of that, even though we have a special line just for right-wing callers. It's 866-745-CONS. And, you know, Limbaugh, I think, is mostly talking to right-wingers. But that's that, and I think that so I would disagree respectfully with your aphorism or saying or whatever it is. Okay, coming up tomorrow. Oh yeah, Super Tuesday. Tomorrow is Super Tuesday, so we're going to be talking with Cliff Schechter about what's going on with that, and David Lockbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists about a new report that they're issuing that's going to curl your hair. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.